In the early hours of June 28, 1969, a routine police raid on a Greenwich Village gay bar ignited a firestorm that would transform American society forever. The Stonewall riots marked the explosive collision between decades of oppression and the revolutionary spirit of the 1960s, creating the spark that launched the modern LGBTQ+ rights movement. Despite being referenced by figures from Barack Obama to Lady Gaga, who named her Equality Foundation after it, the full story, with its complex web of perspectives from drag queens, homeless youth, lesbians, gay men, and even the mafia, remains surprisingly little known. What made this particular raid different? Why did a community that had endured decades of harassment suddenly fight back? And how did a few nights of resistance in a small New York neighborhood launch a global movement that continues to reshape our understanding of human rights and dignity? The Stonewall Inn evolved from its 1840s origin as Jefferson Livery Stables to Bonnie's Stonewall in the 1930s, a tear room secretly operating as a speakeasy during Prohibition before becoming a legitimate restaurant after Prohibition ended. Greenwich Village had attracted LGBT people since the late 1800s, with venues like the Black Rabbit and the Slide Ferry Resort offering rare spaces for open socialization. However, police raids remained a constant threat, with arrests leading to public exposure, job loss, and family devastation. By the 1960s, the mafia controlled much of New York's gay social scene. Tony Fat Tony Loria purchased the fire-damaged Stonewall, reopening it as a gay bar under Matthew Matty the Horse Ionello's protection, who paid the NYPD about $2,000 monthly to prevent raids. Despite its unsavory management and crude interior, plywood walls, dark lighting, stale beer smell, Stonewall became a vital refuge for society's most marginalized. Drag queens, transgender people, effeminate young men, butch lesbians, male prostitutes, and homeless youth. The path to Stonewall was paved with earlier acts of courage. In May 1959, at Cooper's Donuts in Los Angeles, patrons fought back against police harassment. In 1966, drag queens at Gene Compton's cafeteria in San Francisco sparked a riot when one threw coffee in an officer's face. On New Year's Eve 1967, undercover LAPD raids at the Black Cat Tavern triggered unprecedented organized protests. Brave individuals were simultaneously creating the organizational backbone of resistance. Harry Hay formed the Mattachine Society in 1950, the first homophile organization in the United States. Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon founded the Daughters of Bilitis in 1955, initially as a social club that evolved to focus on education and self-acceptance. Frank Kameny became pivotal after being fired from his government astronomy job in 1957. Rather than hiding, he devoted himself to activism, organizing the first White House picket in 1965. Inspired by the civil rights movement, he coined the slogan, "Gay is good," the first positive affirmation for a community taught to hate itself. By 1969, America was primed for revolution. Civil rights activism, Vietnam protests, women's equality movements, and counterculture questioning of norms set the stage for Stonewall. When Deputy Inspector Seymour Pine led police into the Stonewall Inn that June night, they expected routine compliance. Instead, crowds gathered outside after word spread. The rebellion ignited when a lesbian fought against police brutality, repeatedly escaping after being handcuffed. Bleeding from a nightstick blow, she challenged onlookers, "Why don't you guys do something?" The crowd erupted. Activist Craig Rodwell led chants of "Gay power." When police barricaded themselves inside, protesters uprooted a parking meter weighing 30 to 50 pounds as a battering ram. The tactical patrol force arrived in riot gear, but crowds scattered, then regrouped behind police lines. Most memorably, cross-dressers formed a kick line mimicking the Radio City Rockets while singing, "We are the Stonewall Girls. We wear our hair in curls. We wear our dungarees above our Nelly knees." The uprising continued for days. Despite interior damage, the bar reopened the next night. 10-year-old Margot Avery watched from her fire escape, recalling people in drag forming a kick line like a huge bunch of butterflies in colorful chiffon. Media coverage of Stonewall was initially minimal and derogatory, with the New York Times burying brief stories in the Metro section and the Daily News publishing an offensive headline about Queen Power. Craig Rodwell distributed flyers throughout the village, a crucial pre-internet communication method. Meanwhile, Stonewall's boarded windows displayed competing messages. The Mattachine Society urged peaceful and quiet conduct, while another sign proclaimed, "Gay prohibition corrupts cops, feeds mafia," reflecting emerging radical sentiment. Stonewall marked a shift from cautious assimilation to liberation-focused activism. Days later, at the annual reminder protest in Philadelphia, two women defied protocol by holding hands and refused Frank Kameny's attempts to separate them, symbolizing the end of an era. On July 9th, as Dick Leach failed to convince activists that confrontational tactics were ineffective, the Gay Liberation Front formed. Unlike earlier single-issue groups, GLF fought against racism, class oppression, sexism, and international injustice while supporting the Black Panthers and anti-war movement. By December 1969, the Gay Activists Alliance formed, focusing exclusively on gay and lesbian rights. Their ZAP tactic involved direct confrontations with public figures to gain media attention. When Mark Siegel interrupted Walter Cronkite's CBS Evening News, it led to meetings with network executives and improved coverage of gay rights. Lesbian women, marginalized in both gay liberation and feminist movements, responded when Betty Friedan of Now labeled them a lavender menace. Rita Mae Brown formed a group that took over the Second Congress to Unite Women in May 1970, distributing their manifesto, The Woman Identified Woman. Craig Rodwell proposed commemorating Stonewall with a march instead of formal protests at Independence Hall. With partner Fred Sargent and friends Ellen Broidy and Linda Rhodes, they drafted a resolution for Christopher Street Liberation Day without dress codes or age restrictions. Brenda Howard, the mother of Pride, handled the practical work, making calls, distributing flyers, and fundraising. She created the week-long series of events before the march and first called it Pride. The first march began with dozens at Sheridan Square on June 28, 1970, exactly 1 year after the Stonewall raid. As they moved up 6th Avenue, the crowd swelled to over 2,000 by Central Park, a stark contrast to the secrecy gay people had relied on just years before. The Stonewall riots transformed both a movement and American society. The journey from imprisonment to marriage equality has been extraordinary. Yet challenges persist. No federal employment protections, housing discrimination, conversion therapy in some states, transgender discrimination, and racial marginalization within the community. What began that June night continues today. Every pride parade and legal victory echoes the courage of those first Stonewall fighters. Their legacy reminds us that liberation must be demanded, not granted. When marginalized people declare enough, they create waves of change. The Stonewall National Monument reminds us that ordinary places become extraordinary when filled with people who refuse injustice. Stonewall's most powerful message: once a community finds its voice, there's no turning back.